I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
It's never the underdog.
Yes, sir.
Final four now.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. We waited a few days on you here. Had to let that one kind of settle a little bit. Figured we would come back and just kind of react to the season as a whole here, guys. Obviously, didn't kind of end how we wanted it to. So Duke falls to NC State in the Elite Eight, 76-64. One of those kind of weird things maybe is we're two seasons in and 27-9. So same exact record as last year, even though it kind of played out a little bit differently, I guess, for those two squads. But first off, fellas, just globally here, how did you feel about this run to the Elite Eight? Did that satisfy you in terms of like where your bar was expectation wise on this season? And if not, you know, what would that Final Four have meant to you? How differently would you feel had things just went a little bit differently there in that second half?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, coming into the season, obviously we had aspirations of going to the Final Four. We had returned, you know, the four sophomores, you know, the most returning starters we've had, or the three sophomores, I should say, plus Jeremy, you know, the most returning guys we've had since, I think, like Shire's seasons, maybe Singler, or not Singler, but Curry and Kelly, those guys. But either way, it's been a long time. So, you know, just all in all, the way the season unfolded coming into the tournament, seeing Houston there as our one seed, I didn't think we'd get by them. Now, obviously, we didn't have a podcast about it. We got caught a little break there with Chad getting injured.
Sure.
I don't know if we very well could have won the game with them in there, but it would have been a lot harder. I think, you know, Jeremy had an outstanding second half, and a lot of that was because he didn't have this guy chasing him around. Again, Proctor's defense down the stretch of that game kind of is what got us to the Elite Eight game. So that being said, you know, we got by Houston, we got to the Elite Eight. So I'm not disappointed in that sense, but getting to the Elite Eight game and having just the opportunity we had to play an 11 seed, we just never catch those kind of breaks. And it's NC State, it's a team that just beat us. You
right.
Think that we're going to have a little bit of that revenge factor going for us, and so weren't able to get it done. So a little disappointed on that end.
A little bit of 2022 kind of deja vu there, just slightly, right? Like the stakes not quite as high, but a little bit of that left over. Yeah. Ro, what about you?
I mean, it's one of those weird things where if you look at it from the perspective of the start of the season, I would have said an Elite Eight is a good result. You know, I never go into a season expecting a Final Four, even if we're loaded or whatever, just because the tournament is so random and just so many things can go wrong. And like, you know, you saw like 2017, we lost in the second round. So clearly this was a better result than that. But it was just like Shu said, the circumstances of the bracket kind of opening up for us in that way. I mean, Houston was still there in our path, of course. But then once we got by that, it's like, all right, we beat the technically better team. And I know NC State was on an incredible hot run, and maybe they'll still continue it in the next game. But I just thought that that was kind of like a golden opportunity missed there. And I have to wonder, too, how much having played the late game just 2 days earlier against that physical, physical Houston team had just exhausted our guards because they seemed to have nothing.
Yeah. And then you flip it around in less than 48 hours, you got a 5 p.m. Sunday tip on Easter. That's tough, man. And I think for me, this is really weird of maybe not like how I thought about the season overall, but like the sting of it would have been less if we would have just lost to a healthy Houston team in the Sweet 16. And then I can chalk it up in my head to like, okay, they're one of the 2-3 best teams all year. Sure, that would have, I would have preferred that to be in the Final Four had we also been a 1 seed or something, but we lost to Houston in Dallas, whatever. Then you get the break of Shed being out, you get that win, and then you essentially become the 1 seed and you're playing an 11 seed. And it's like, okay, you have to go. Right. It just felt like, okay, you got to take advantage of this. Just couldn't do it, man. Just, it sucked too, because it's true. I think you said it and probably wherever you got it from or whatever, but our defense had been so good in the tournament. Right. And then we turn around and give up 55 and a half. It was almost like that Arizona game a bit, where it's just like we couldn't find it. Just nothing was there.
I thought about the 2017. You know, the South Carolina. Just we gave up like 65 in the second half. I think we gave up more. We gave up more to them in the second half than they like averaged on the season for a game.
It was very similar in a way, because if you remember that South Carolina game, I think they had 19 points at the end of the first half. And so it kind of played out the same here too, right? NC State had 21 points. So it looked like our defense was kind of continuing to be on track, and we weren't scoring well, but maybe we were going to win an ugly game. And then foul trouble started and stuff like that, and the wheels just kind of came off.
Yeah, we had an opportunity to, right? We're up 9 or whatever it was, and you had that chance to maybe just push it to 15. Yep. You know, if we were scoring in that first half, maybe you get out of there and it's like 37-21 or something, and then it effectively kind of becomes over, right? Unless you just completely give up.
A lot of our shots in that first half were coming up like we were short,
way short, dude. The way, and that's why I thought,
man, we're gassed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we didn't talk about it a lot. And I know it's become a thing, a little bit of a thing on Twitter, but like the ball they played with, I don't know if you guys noticed it. Like,
there's been a lot of talk about that.
Okay. Yeah.
The kid from UConn basically said that it's like, yeah, you have to adjust your shot, right?
It's full of air. It's so inflated. Like, you know, they used to play with that Wilson solution, which I always bought one of those because the ball was incredibly awesome. And this is like the Evo NXT or something, but it just looks like it's going to implode when you bounce it sometimes.
Yeah. It's, you know, but it's the same Ball State used to, right?
Yeah. So everybody used it. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I get it. But, you know, but if you're a shooting team, you know,
right, a top 10 shooting team in like the country, then that
takes a lot from you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and Blake's had those 2 steals that, remember,
he dribbles it over.
Yeah. I mean, that could have been part of it.
I wonder if like truly great shooters adjust more quickly to things like that, because McCain had a good tournament overall.
Sure. Yeah.
One, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. It's just one of those things. You know, I just think we just ran out of gas, really. Like, we miss Caleb in a situation like that, because there's no buttons off the bench that we can push, right? I mean, you can maybe get some hustle or some energy from like Ryan and Sean and Jalen and those guys, but you don't have any like offense that you can bring off.
No, they're not going to give you a lot of scoring.
No usage that you can bring off to really give anybody any respite. Sucks to see Tyrese go 0-9 in that game after playing what might have been like one of the truly just great 10 to 12 minute stretches of defense, like maybe ever seen. Like,
that's
from
what
a
I hate.
Player.
I don't say the grief he's getting, but you know, this, the talk of the 0-9 thing, 0-5 from 3. But I mean, we wouldn't even have been in that game.
Yeah, look at RJ Davis and Caleb Love. They shot their team out of it too, right? Yeah. Like, he didn't shoot 20 shots. Now, if you were like 2-for-20 or 3-for-18, then it's like, oh man, 0-9 is, you didn't make the ones, the opportunities that were there, but you weren't killing us. But man, his defense on Cryer was just, Friday night was fun. You know, it was a terrible game, but it was fun to see him just kind of lock in and just get those back-to-back huge stops, man. For it to end that way, that sucked.
And that's such a like fans kind of like, what have you done for me lately mentality. It's like, sure. It wasn't right. Even like 48 hours ago that like he was, you know, probably he may have had the most important performance in that game. I guess you could argue Flip, you could argue Ryan Young off the bench, but man, Proctor had like three of the best defensive plays I've ever seen, honestly, yeah. And down the stretch there, obviously when he ripped the ball away. And then that one where he dived on the floor.
Yeah, dude.
And then the final play is maybe my favorite, where he's just like tracking. I forget who was taking that final three.
I think it was Sharp.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was Sharp because he wasn't on Cryer anymore. But he just tracked him the whole time, blocked off his lane. He had to come back out, and then he closed out incredibly well without fouling him.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it sucks for after that performance for the offense to just not be there, man. After that first half, I thought good. You know, I felt really good about it. I was like, all right, you know, you'll take the 6 points, and you know, we spot ourselves six and see how this thing goes. And then it just imploded.
Yeah, I mean, to State's credit, look, the first half they had their worst shooting half of the season, and then the second half they had their best.
Yeah.
And I think we would have probably lost to Purdue anyway, just given the way our, you know, offense was functioning in the tournament. I just don't think we would have had enough, but you get a week of rest basically, and then you get to see what happens.
A new venue too, yeah. Right? Like, it's for whatever reason, Friday I just chalked it up to Houston just being that good defensively, but you know, then it turns around and does it to State, and State's an okay defensive team, but, and they're hot, I get it, but let's not make them into something that they're not either, right? Like, they're just middle of the, no pun intended, middle of the pack in offense and defense. And our offense just didn't go to Dallas. It just did not travel to Dallas for whatever reason. So, you know, it sucks, but, you know, let's pan out. So two seasons in here, how are we feeling about John, man? I thought it was kind of bush league that he had to answer a question about his like job performance, like from a reporter there, like in, the, you know, we're talking about an Elite Eight run and they're asking him about job security, like, you know, whatever.
I mean, that just tells you where the, you know, the level of the program. An Elite Eight isn't good enough for you. Yeah. Like, and to some of us, yeah, maybe it's not, you know, we wanted to have a Final Four. That's our goal every year, but you know, let's not act like, you know, he was terrible this year because we only got to the Elite Eight.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
And plenty of better Duke teams haven't even made it that far. I mentioned, sure. You know, 2017, that was a team with more talent. Now I wouldn't say it performed better on the season overall, but you know, they lost in the second round. The 2011 team, one of the more loaded teams, lost in the Sweet 16 in by a significant margin. You know, there's other examples I can think of. 2006, that team lost like two or three games all year, and then loses in the Sweet 16.
And 05 too, right? Lost in the Sweet 16. You know, it happens, but you know, and I think for me, it was. That was the sting of this too, is like, I just really wanted it for John, like to just backdoor our way into a Final Four.
It would be so validating, right?
So much validation for him. So much of that, like, it's not completely kind of like monkey off your back, you know, but it's a huge step into just kind of getting that extra momentum there. That might be the first time I've ever really just wanted it for him. I'll say 22, I wanted it for K because it was his last one. Yeah. But other than that, it was like selfish. I just wanted this for me as a fan to just kind of puff my chest. But this one, I just really wanted it for John, man.
You know, some guys just have to knock on the door a couple times before they get in, right? And it's a good learning experience, hopefully, for us.
Yeah, and you hear him talking to about like he compares it to him as a player. Right. And just having so his parallel as a coach of like, you know, we knocked on the door a little bit, like lost first round, went to the Sweet 16 my junior year, and then finally got the door. But you don't get the players that are going to be around to do that. So maybe for us right now, it's just with the coach and what he can learn from it and how he adjusts to it. But I don't feel any differently about him now than I did when I started the season. And I was, you know, obviously I'm really high on what he's doing.
Yeah. You know, we dealt with injuries this year again. Wasn't actually the team that we really thought we were going to have. I mean, I know we didn't put this in the outline, but, and it, I don't know how much you guys follow. You think if McKenzie comes, that it's a different team because we kind of lacked another one of those big wings, right?
Yeah, I mean, if depending on how you feel about his season, which, you know, is debatable, great. I guess, yeah. But, you know, maybe, sure, right? Like, maybe it does give you a little bit of extra dimension. Honestly, though, man, like, even if we just don't lose Caleb, what happens, right? Like, what does that give us? Just that piece.
Yeah. I mean, 27 wins, two seasons in a row, pretty damn good start to a career, honestly. An ACC championship, an Elite Eight. There's a lot of coaches who have turned out to be great coaches who haven't started that well. And I know that John has some built-in advantages, right? With the legacy that Kay created and the recruiting machine we already have. But it's also worth bearing in mind that these aren't like vintage high school classes we've been working with.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Filipowski's going to go lottery, I would guess, or maybe he goes like 16 or 17 in there. But I don't see him as any more than like a role player in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, McCain, same thing. He might go in the 20s. I don't see him as any more than a role player. So we just haven't really had, you know, I mean, maybe like we just kind of, because of those last 10 games of last season, a little bit overestimated how much growth we were going to get out of each player. And they did improve, and we can get to that. I think that might be later in the outline, but they did improve, but I think we were all kind of penciling in like these maybe unrealistic, like Luke Kennard level jumps. You know what I mean? Like, how often does that actually happen in your sophomore year?
Right. Yeah. And it's been noted that these last, you know, this draft and next are just been weak, right? They're just been weak. Now the high school classes coming up, the next two at least, are looking pretty decent right now. So maybe that will shift a little bit. Obviously, after next year, the COVID eligibility ends. So you kind of lose some of these 25, 26 year olds playing. Like, what is that going to do to the landscape? But don't want to get too far into that. We got a bunch of stuff to cover here, fellas. Let's go to the positive stuff first. So what's your most memorable kind of like moment or game or highlight? Like, what do you have that you look away from this season as kind of like, all right, that's something that I'll pluck and put that in the core memory bank?
I think mine's easy. You know, I went to a couple games this year, but one of them during Christmas break, went to the Syracuse game, stood in the, in the crazy section for, I think it was the second time I've done that. Wasn't looking good in the first half. We did not make a three. And then the second half, we hit 8 threes to just kind of steamroll those guys by 20. So that's a game that I kind of highlighted as a memory this year.
And the other game that both you guys went to is kind of a highlight, the Virginia game there. You know, it's just, they're such a frustrating team to play, and to be able to get out and run on them and really kind of run up the score was fun. But I can think of a lot of other little things too. Obviously, Jared McCain getting really hot at Florida State. That was really fun. Him getting really hot in the second round versus JMU was really fun. Just whenever he would go on a heater was great. We already mentioned that the Proctor defensive plays down the stretch of the Houston game. That would be one. I think getting some of those road kind of monkeys off our backs was kind of nice too. Like going up to Virginia Tech and winning pretty easily. That was a highlight for me.
And Miami, right, we beat them by 30 in the road. Like, yeah, you know, you went at Florida State. We finally went at State, even though they turned around and beat us twice after that.
But. And that was, you know, I was going to mention that one. The reason I liked that one, that was kind of the Sean Stewart breakout game. I was just happy for Sean. Like, you could tell he's been, you know, there putting in the work and everything, and he finally got to see it pay off. We didn't really get to see a lot more of it down the stretch like I wanted to, but,
you know. Yeah. I think for me, I guess I'll cheat a little bit. I kind of have one game, I think, and like maybe two moments. So for me, the Baylor game is, now we have to go all the way back, but if you do put yourself in that mindset, I think coming into that game, we're like 7-3, right? We're flirting with not being ranked for like 22nd or 23rd, somewhere in that ballpark coming into that game, they're top 10. Now they had just gotten waxed by Michigan State. I get that, but we're coming into that game, no marquee wins, right? If you lose that game, you're a 7-4 and the wheels probably starting to fall off a little bit, right? Like you're running out of opportunities here. And I don't know how much I remember from that game, but we kind of dominated early, and then Baylor storms back. They take a 6-point lead like halfway through the second half. And then we end up just kind of blowing them out the rest of the way there. So that being the game, that's no Proctor in that game as well. That was the one that I think kind of put our season on a bit of a different trajectory in terms of the moments. I could pull up Florida State, Jared, but I think I'll go James Madison, Jared. And just, you know, I was watching that game, me and Shuff and Caleb were watching that game too. And, you know, he comes out and hits his first six threes. And it's just like, all right, take advantage of playing the 12 seed, right? That's what I wanted us to do playing State, of just take advantage of getting this lower seeded team and beat the brakes out of them. And then the last one was what we just talked about, just Proctor's defense. The final like 7.5 minutes of that Houston game was just, I'll remember that for a while, of just how he was able to just get those big stops. It almost reminded me of the 05 Carolina game where we just kind of just blew up their actions late and just got the win.
It was such a good adjustment too, because I mean, I guess you could argue, was it a good adjustment or was it something that should have happened from the beginning? But, you know, Cryer, no offense to Jared, but he was torching him a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I thought that putting Proctor on him really changed the game.
Yeah. And maybe that's where Shed going out really allows us to make that adjustment, right? Yep. Where it gives you a little bit more opportunity. Yeah. So I guess I'll roll with those three. All right. Well, we did positive, so I guess we have to do it. Biggest disappointment, either from a player who didn't meet your expectation or a coaching decision or just a certain loss. I think let's throw out getting swept by Carolina, because that's just always going to be like super disappointing, right? So outside of that, any player strifes or issues that you have, or any just kind of losses that just really stuck out to you?
The Georgia Tech one, you know, right off the bat. Brutal. That was first game, you know, we've got these expectations and just kind of lay an egg. I mean, I won't say lay an egg. We snatched, you know, defeat from the jaws of victory, yeah. Basically.
Yeah. Thanks for the stare down there. But
yeah, that one kind of sticks out first and foremost. Obviously, the Pitt game, letting, you know, Blake
hop on the scoring table and punk us a little bit.
Yeah, that was tough. You know, player wise, we've talked about it. Some of just the bad body language, the chemistry kind of looking stuff. You know, that was kind of tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, it's like we had several opportunities to really improve our seeding, whether it was beating Arizona early in the season there or just closing out. I mean, I know this is not, I'm not cheating in mentioning the Carolina games. It's just losing those back-to-back games to Carolina and State. We went from possibly a 2 seed to a 4 in just a matter of days. And who knows what, you know, that may have even helped us with the way our path played out. So, but at the same time, you're always going to take a 2 statistically over a 4.
Right. Maybe then you're playing State in the Sweet 16, but you get a week of prep to kind of come into it. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. And then the other thing I would just say is in terms of players, like I've been a big Mark Mitchell fan and he had a really good middle of the season. Like there was a 17 game stretch that I looked up last night from like January 6th to like March something where, you know, so it's a good like 9 weeks where he was averaging like 13 points, 7 or 8 rebounds, 60% shooting like 55% from 3. But then he ended the season just kind of how he started it, with a dud those last 3 games.
What did you say the start date for that was?
January 6th.
Yeah, or even if you go back to the second, right?
Because I was just curious.
Has 21 against Syracuse, so yeah.
I was just curious if it coincided when, like, didn't his dad tweet out something like, you know,
yeah, that was around it then too.
Yeah, yeah, that was I think he tweeted on the 31st, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
I obviously remember because it was like the last day of the year.
Yeah. And Mark's a weird one too, because man, like, you know, in the tournament, he didn't attempt a single 3. He shouldn't, but it's like he was at least, he had started the season awful. But then he had also started to kind of take 2 a game here or there, you know, and go like 1 for 2, or he had gotten his percentages back.
He was hitting them,
He just made his only 2 when we lost to State in the ACC tournament. Didn't even attempt any. You know, only gets double figures once, and that was against Vermont, who he was really good in that game. But then something happened there.
He just looked really timid, and he didn't seem to have a lot of lift either. He just wasn't finishing anything around the basket. And I know, you know, Houston's obviously a great defense, so you can chalk that one up but JMU isn't. And he went 1 of 6 in that game and got his shot blocked a lot. And he was not very effective versus State either. So,
yeah, you know, for me, it is the Arizona game. If there's like a disappointing loss and we're taking out the Carolina ones, just because it was at that point, I think we're number two or number three in the country, right? Like our expectations, our hype, our excitement are coming in. It's a big marquee game in Cameron, non-con. We're used to kind of winning those, right? And sending that statement. We had the game, you know, it's a good game and we had it locked up, not locked up, but we had a chance to really just take it. And then we come down and give up the and one, slap the four and lose the game. So that one kind of sucked. You'd like to have that one back. In terms of players, I don't know if I want to single anyone out, but I think for me, there is a frustration in that each of the guys that returned all kind of improved. Even Mark, if just the three-point shooting didn't, but some of his other stuff, like they all improved, but somehow it just didn't like collectively lift the product, right? Like their numbers individually each check out of like, okay, freshman, they were here, sophomore, they're there. There's an improvement, right? Like you see now, maybe it's not the Luke Kennard level jumps that we were wanting, but there is improvement, but it just didn't really seem to manifest itself collectively. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I looked up a lot of their stats the other day. Like, I think Mark jumps up from, I'm quoting this from memory, but I think he jumps up from like 112 offensive rating to 122 or something like that, which is really good, obviously. I think Flip jumps up from like 108 to like 116 or 117, which is great considering his usage. His BPM went all the way up to like 11.1, which is, that's like historical air. Like that's right up there with Vernon Carey and Zion and Kyrie and Wendell Carter and some of the best players we've had in that. Same thing with Proctor. His shooting efficiency really improved. Fewer turnovers, more assists, just everything across the board really for them when you look at it. And the team also kind of improved on paper, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We're like what, like eight spots higher on KenPom, much better offense, comparable 15 defense,
offensive and defensive efficiency. Yep. Yeah. Number one offense in the conference, number three defense, right? Number one shooting team in the like right. All these, you're right. And it's just like, it just, this is a results based league, right? We hear that about the NBA all the time. So it just didn't collectively seem to lift us in the way that you might would have hoped.
Well, it was like the inability to kind of play a full 40 minutes is what it seemed like.
Yeah.
Because we had all those slow starts we talked about, but then also just the fact that we lost every single one of our losses was by single digits except for that final game.
Yeah.
Like if you just flip a few of those results, we're suddenly looking at a great season, right?
Yeah.
So it's just those minor details of like executing down the stretch. And some of that's on the players, some of that's probably on a rookie coach, not rookie, but sophomore coach,
a young coach. Yeah. And because there didn't seem to be that much improvement. Like we continued to be in these close games and we didn't seem to handle them really any differently. So I will say back when we first started this thing, not when we first started the pod, but like Friday this season, one of the things I said is like, I'm just got tired of getting blown out last year, right? Like that is not something that we would typically do. And shouts to them. They didn't give up. They did fight. They were in every single game. Obviously, that last one got away from us a little bit. But for that to be the only one, I think that says something about this group. But all right, well, let's take a quick break here, I guess. And then we'll jump back in and talk a little bit more about player performances.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, well, let's do some pleasant surprises in terms of the players. Typically, I'll let you guys go first here, but I'm just going to steal it because it was someone that I kind of maybe questioned the role a little bit, or like, how is this going to work again? But to me, it's just Jeremy Roach, right? Like I said, I spent the whole offseason trying to tamper expectations when everyone just wanted to throw him into being Quinn Cook. And I don't think he reached Quinn in terms of like the leadership, because Quinn was just special in that regard. And like you hear about it across the NBA too. So there's just something innate about Quinn that's a little bit different. But we're talking about a kid that last year he shot a season high from three, which is 34%, which is basically just average, right? And then to come back this year and to shoot 43%, which is really a mistell, because dude, he was basically almost like a 50%, yeah, like 48 to 50% three-point shooter, and they were all soft and they all looked good. And then he gets banged up and it just never came back to that. But for me, that my pleasant surprise is going to be Jeremy. You know, that jump that he took in efficiency and being able to be that lethal from three, I wish he would have shot about 70 more of them, to be honest with you. But so for me, it's Jeremy in terms of just the surprise and being able to truly be a knockdown shooter out there.
Yeah, I mean, what were his shooting splits? I think they were like 47, 43, 86. That's outstanding. Yeah. Yeah. I think he had a 125 offensive rating. Huge, huge jump. By far his best season, and the other ones aren't even close.
Yeah, across the board, his numbers are free throw shooting, 2-point percentage. His 2-point percentage his freshman year was the highest, but he took almost 200 more twos this year. Yep. So it's like, you know, whatever. Turnover rate was by far the lowest it's been. Shouts to Jeremy. How y'all got?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of torn between a team thing, or you want to keep it specifically to players.
No, you can go team if you want to go that route.
Because I thought just the improvement in the shooting overall. I mean, some of that is Jeremy, and then some of that is my other pleasant surprise, which is just Jared McCain. Like,
yeah,
I thought he was going to be good. Don't get me wrong, but he's a freshman still, right? You don't expect. He wasn't just a serving of ACC Rookie of the Year. He should have gotten that. But he was one of the best players in the conference. And I did not expect that for a freshman who was ranked, what, in like the late teens, early 20s?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. He wasn't, you know, a top 10 and really not even.
All of us said that he would be the one to come off the bench, right? Yeah. And it would be exactly. Foster. And yeah.
And Foster played well too, honestly. But yeah, just the team 3-point shooting, I think, finished around 38%, maybe 37.5 or something like that. Which, you know, is just the best it's been in years, to be honest. Like, I think we've talked about how Duke used to always have lethal shooting. And then there was that stretch to kind of close Kay's career where we just didn't, you know, the 2019 team shot like, what, 30%. And yeah. Then I don't think the 2022 team was all that great either. And then it's like just, and that was always, it seemed to be a weak spot in recent years. So, you know, and even last year, obviously. So the fact that John kind of got that back on track was encouraging.
Yeah. God, 19 is such a travesty. To finish 327 and 3-point percentage with that group is brutal. Yeah. All right. Shu, what about you, man?
Yeah. I mean, you know, kind of Roel hit on it, but Jared, you know, coming into the season, like you said, I thought he might be the guy coming off the bench. You know, he started a little rough and he kind of hinted at that in the post game, you know, press conference that, you know, John and everybody just had confidence in him early in the year when he didn't really have it going. You know, we talked about it, how kind of early when he did get it going from three, he just wasn't having any success, you know, putting the ball on the floor and driving, you know, getting into the paint and scoring. But that became lethal there, you know, towards the end of the season. So just the, you know, the, for him to stick with everything, it was just kind of pretty impressive for a kid that age.
And him and Flip are the only two guys on the roster that played and started in all 36 games.
Sure.
So, you know, shouts for them for that, right? Availability is the best ability. If we're quoting
God. I thought of another big one, actually. The defense. The fact that it finished, like, what did it finish, 15th or something like that?
15th.
That could be it. That was something I actually wanted to bring up when we were talking about Shire's first 2 years. I think there's been some offensive issues. Offense bogs down a ton at times. We saw it against NC State. But the defense, I think, if anything, he's overperformed what I expected from him as a defensive coach, especially with this year's team. You know, you don't have Lively back there. You have three guards most of the time on the court. To end up with a top 15 defense out of that, and one of the, you know, and one of the guards in McCain, I would say, was often targeted.
Right.
And the fact that you still end up with a top 15 defense, to me, just speaks about the scheme. And I'm not like, you know, I'm not Geisinger here. I'm not going to break down why the scheme is so good, but just to my eyes, when I watch it, it just seems fundamentally sound in some way. Like, everybody looks like they know where to be and they're there at the right time.
Yeah. And we're not extending ourselves too much, right? Like, we're not really putting ourselves in a position to get completely, you know, we're not starting our defense quite as high as we have before. But yeah, I'll say too, that's been a huge pleasant surprise as well. I guess we can segue here. We can talk a little bit about next season. I know as we're recording this, the McDonald's game's on right now. But in terms of who's on the roster, and again, this is all just going to be some predictive stuff. Like, some of this might even come out before we drop this thing. I don't know how quickly these things are going to get announced. Typically with Duke, it does go a little bit further, right? Usually after the team banquet is when things kind of start to get announced. So we'll see. But from what we got now, we've been told we got a huge class coming in. We've been told the staff's preparing for a mass exodus here. However, we've seen some changes in some stock maybe for some of these guys. Who are all y'all looking at to come back here? Or maybe I should phrase it as, who's the biggest recruit on the roster that John needs to lock up? 3-2-1, Jared McCain. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously you back up the Brinks truck, you know, the NIL Brinks truck for Jared, and just see, you know, look, does he love college? Is he one of those kids that just loves college? You know,
not a Duke.
You know, without him, obviously, you know, his stock's really high, and I think it's probably the best time with the draft being what it is for him to just take his chances and move on. I'd take him back, believe me, in a heartbeat. I think after that, you need to at least Proctor or Roach. One of those guys has to, I mean, I get Foster too is in there. We have to have a guard, you know. I'd like to have a point guard. So I guess Proctor would be the next big one for me.
Okay. Priority one. Okay. What about you, Ro? Is that track?
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of working with the assumption that Filipowski and McCain are the locks to go. And maybe Locke is too strong for McCain, but I'm just kind of looking at their draft stock.
Of the guys that should go, right? Yeah. If you're making strictly a financial-based decision, those are the guys right. that should go. Yeah.
Yeah, assuming everybody's a rational actor, right? Like, those are the guys who would go pro, and then, frankly, everybody else would return. But then you got to look at the roster and, like, what kind of opportunity there is there. So, obviously, that's going to influence things, too. I think that Foster probably will stay. So I'm kind of making that one as an assumption. But then I'm kind of torn. I think either of Roach or Proctor would be great to have back. Yeah. I'm kind of torn which one, though, because I think Proctor is like the tantalizing mystery box where, you know, you've seen his defense be really good. You've seen the 3-point percentage improve a little bit. The penetration and scoring isn't where you'd like it to be, but it could get there. But Roach is like the known commodity, right? There's a floor there where you know you're going to get really solid guard play from him.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of torn between those two, but I think I would like Roach back just for like the sentimental value of it. Just like I've gotten so attached to him after watching him for 4 years and seeing his journey right. and all that.
Sure.
But either guy, honestly, would... If we can manage to get two of those guards back, and obviously the one that you would want the most would be McCain, because I think he could be like, you know, player of the year caliber.
Yeah.
At least
McCain's the big one, right? But I think you're right in terms of like, if we're talking about, okay, rationally, realistically, McCain and Flip should be the ones to say, hey, if you're going to go, you're graded safely in the first round, right? You have a chance to sneak lottery, late lotto. Makes a ton of sense. Obviously, if you want to come back, then you allow that for sure, right? You welcome that. I do agree with you, though. I think for me, in terms of if I'm John recruiting, it would be Proctor, only because Roach is a senior, so he just kind of has to make the decision, right? It's kind of like, dude, it's here if you want it. If you'd rather just start to live your life and see what else is out there. I don't know what kind of aspirations he has. I know he's really big into the music stuff. Maybe he just wants to go, you know, see what's out there for him. I get it. You put your due in, you did your 4 years. Like, I'm good with that. But it's Proctor for me, because this is a kid who does have legit NBA potential and like aspirations, and it's just not quite there yet right now. He could probably still sneak into the second round somewhere, get on a roster. But if you can get that type of guy to come back in college, and then you're hoping for another incremental leap, you know, even if it's the same kind of level that we just saw, that gives you a really high level starting guard. So I think to me it would be Proctor. I think the biggest thing is you got to try to get two of those four back between Roach, McCain, Proctor, and Foster, right? You got to get to McCain being the one that really
guards.
Yeah, McCain being the one. McCain comes back, then I'm back on the train of like, okay, we are a Final Four contender again. That's where my expectation would be. Without McCain, it's kind of a wait and see. For me.
Yeah, because I think the defense next year might even actually get better.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I want Proctor too, right? I want to see Proctor return to being able to do what he does. Now, we don't have Lively, but right. you got Common and Flag back there that just wreak havoc. So,
and let's say you got Foster out there too. Imagine the size of that team.
Yeah.
You got 6'5", 6'5". You got whoever's playing the three, and then you've got Flag at 6'9", probably more like 6'10", to be honest with you. And then you've got Common there at like over 7 feet.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about the defense. I want somebody that, you know, can score for us, because obviously, look, I love Cooper. I think some people are looking at it like he's going to average 25 or something because he's the number.
No, that's not.
We went through that with Lively, right?
It's a mistake if we tried to use him that way too. Yeah. It'd be a disservice to him and us, to be honest with you.
Yes.
He's not Zion. He's not even like Ingram, in my opinion. You know, his game is more of like stuff the box score kind of game.
Yeah.
I think hopefully Evans could give us some of that offensive juice. That would be the guy that I'd look the most to for having the highest ceiling of the incoming guys as a scorer. You know, I know people really like Knipple's game too, like, but he seems like he's much more like polished, kind of steady. I don't know how explosive he's going to be. But then you're dealing with freshmen too. So yeah, it's right. Like just having any returning player where you know what you're going to get from them is important.
Yeah. And I think going back to that too, is it's, I know everyone's hammering for the portal, and I've been kind of like, I've critiqued our use of the portal, but at this point, now I'm kind of like, everyone wants to go jump in and they need a guard and they need a big and they need a wing. Well, to me, you have some of those already here, right? And so you kind of have to try to recruit some of those guys back. If not, then what's the point of all of this? You know, like if we're going to all like pump our fist and get super excited when we sign a top class and these kids commit, but we're not willing to kind of ride it out, then it's, I don't really like that feeling either. That leaves a little bit of a sour taste if we're pushing guys out. I'm not saying we're doing that. I'm always going to say, hey, Mark, if you want to run this thing back, we'll figure it out. You know, like Tyrese, right. You want to run this thing back, we'll figure it out. If that pushes one of those commits, not named flag, to decommit, then so be it for me. Yeah. I'll take right. it.
Because like you don't know, there's no reason to assume that any of those guys are going to be any better. And it's right. like also like as a fan base, haven't we seen enough these like stories of just players that the fans had written off who then completely turned their career around and ended up really mattering, like a Brian Zubek or something? You know, I have to reach back because we've had so few 4-year players lately, but even Jeremy Roach.
Right. Yeah. And it's so hard to predict the portal too. Right. Like, sure, you might hit on the Harrison Ingram or the Brady Manning, but you might just easily hit a Pete Nance. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, okay, we'll miss the tournament. So I don't want to just go pluck everything out of the portal, because then if you do, then I'm looking at a guy like Sean Stewart, TJ Power. Are you pushing those guys out? Like, I'd like to return them. I think they could play a role on next year's team, and their junior season could be wide open.
And for me, that's kind of the bigger thing, is like, John talked about it. We got to get old. We've talked about we've got to get out of the cycle of 6-man freshman class. Like, you can't have half your team every year be freshmen, right? So we've got to break that somehow.
I would just rather do it with our guys coming back and building your, because even going to the portal, you get old, but not collectively, not like your team identity, because you're still trying to reintegrate 4 new players. So that, like, they're older, but not together.
It's essentially one and done, right? It's just like old one and done without the NBA talent.
Yeah. Now, if you could cherry pick like a sophomore or a junior that's entering, that's a position of need, and you're just like, okay, I can go get this guy for like the store kid in Wisconsin, that's not a fit for us. But it's, if you needed that, and like if Hubert Davis goes and plucks that's huge, because then you get him for 2 years, right? Like Ingram comes back for them, then that works out. But for me, I'm a little more just kind of, if it's there in the portal, okay. But like, realistically, who are you going to go get in the portal that's going to be better than like Roach or Proctor?
Yeah, exactly.
There's not that many guys out there.
You're not finding many guys with the splits that you said for 43, 46, you know.
Right, or you need the big 86. Guy. Where it's like, okay, well, who are you going to go get that's going to be better than what Sean Stewart gives you, plus the fact that you know who he is and he's one of us, right? Like, that's the part for me of
I don't understand the idea of getting another big at all. Like, I can see a guard if like Foster's the only one who stays, for example.
Sure. Yeah, we lose 3 of these guards, we'll have to go get something, right? You don't want to waste flag on just relying on playing 6 of your 8 guys and being freshmen. Right. That's not going to work.
But to me, it's like, you've got Common, you've got Flag, who's probably going to play more of the 4, but he can slide down to the 5 and some crunch time stuff. You've got Stewart. You know, if Patrick, you know, I know he was injured, but if he can give you anything next year, that's your, like, you want to give him time too.
Yeah.
The Gungba, that is.
Yeah. At least for him to feel like,
right. Yeah.
You included. Just didn't wash right over me. Right. Yeah. So that he comes back and is ready to go as the starting center pretty much. As a sophomore, like that's to me is how I want us to get older. Now, I get that, you know, sure, if we lose 4 guys to the portal, you know, let's say Mark hits the portal, Blake's hits the portal, shoot hits the portal, shooting Reeves. I mean, you weren't getting anything from that anyway. So it's not like you have to really replace that. But if some of your big guys started hitting the portal, that's what I don't want to see, right? Like, no, not to pick on Carolina, but like, I wouldn't want a guy like Love to play the role like that at Duke to then see him kind of get shunned out. That, I don't know, man. I don't know how y'all feel about that. That just leaves a little bit of a sour taste for me personally. So we'll see. A lot of guys trying to push Proctor and Mark out. So
the Mark thing is a little awkward, just because if you are going to go back,
yeah, brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. If you are going to go back to two bigs, I mean, you could do a little staggering, I think, but like how much of that are you realistically going to do? I guess you could say that Commons probably only going to play like what, 25 minutes at most.
Yeah. Cause how many freshman bigs are ready to go 35 minutes, you know,
especially like, the tall ones like that.
Yeah.
You know, they often get in foul trouble. They just don't have the stamina. So if he's only playing 25 minutes, but you're going to play flag like 32, I would imagine.
As much as he can handle, I would think. Yeah.
So then it's like if you're in a situation where you're only playing Mitchell and Flag together, only playing Mitchell and Common together, how many minutes is that total? And then what happens to Stewart's minutes?
Yeah. And you got a guy like TJ there too, right? That right. I think, man, I think he can figure this out. And I think he could be good. Like the shooting alone, like just a few other parts of that game needs to come together. Another offseason, another year of being in the rotation. And then maybe you get that as a junior and senior, right?
Like, right. And also maybe like having two defensive stalwarts back there behind him, like makes his defensive ability a little bit less important.
Right. And it's, to me, it's just that like talking out of both sides of our mouth as the fan base of like, oh, we want to get back to program guys. We want to get away from one and done. Well, this is what that looks like. This is what these kids look like, right? Like these are the kids that you're able to do that with. So you can't really have both. And if you're going to try to push the ones out that are your developmental players, then what are we doing? You know,
they want to have like Jared McCain come in and be as good as Jared McCain was, but then stay for
all 4 years. Yeah. So do I, right? But Grant Hill is not Grant Hill anymore. That's not how this works anymore. You're just not going to get that, man. I don't know. You have to recruit. You would have to try to scout it, right? Let me go find the undersized guard like the Roach or the RJ Davis and hope that he's going to be awesome in college and he's going to stay 4 years. But then there's still limitations to that, right? How many banners RJ got?
Yeah.
Same as me?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know.
Same as Roach, right?
Yeah. But, right, like, you know, Roach has got more because he's got the ACC tournament.
Yeah, sure. And it's like also with Roach, like, would he have stayed if our backcourt wasn't so thin in his early years? Like, let's say, imagine that he entered as a freshman on a team loaded with guards, like this year's team. He wouldn't have been getting any minutes. He got to play a lot early because the team wasn't very good. And that kind of benefited us and got him to stay 4 years. But even somebody of his like small size, lack of NBA potential and all that still might have transferred.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe Jeremy decides, you know what? I could run this thing one more bat, like Tom, you know, one more game, yeah. Jeremy, because you got some boys coming, right? You got some dogs coming to run with you. So, yeah.
And we'll this team's going to need a score and punch. And that, you know, obviously he provided that for us a lot this year.
Yeah. I just hope, and I don't think it will, because I do think John will at least provide not so much ultimatums, but I think he will be a little stern. At least that's what's been communicated, that like, all right, decisions are going to have to be made in a timely fashion here, right? Like I can't just wait this thing all the way out into July here or June here. So I would expect to probably be hearing something over the next several weeks, you know. But anything else y'all need to hit on, man? If not, I think we can go ahead and kind of wrap this thing up.
No, sounds good to me. I know we did over-unders at the beginning of the season. I thought we wouldn't have enough time to fit that into this episode. We'd be going another 45 minutes. So hopefully we'll come back like next week or something, just as a nice little filler episode and look back over those. Because I think it's another nice way to like assess the season and see where our expectations were versus where things ended up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then by then, maybe we'll have a little bit more kind of leverage on who's staying, who's going, all of that good stuff. We do have trying to get some guests lined up, hopefully get one big one from last year to come back on. We'll see. You know, that's a little bit of a tall task there, but we'll try to get some people on, try to get some content over the summer. Obviously, if, you know, once the high school stuff starts up in the summer, that'll be a big thing. We'll do the whole Peach Jam, all that stuff again. But I would expect probably for us to drop down to maybe once a week or so here over the off season as things kind of slow down until things pick back up again. But obviously, you know, we appreciate all y'all for sticking with us. Rate, review, subscribe. Again, you can email us at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. You can find us on the boards at thedevilsden.com. Find us on X/Twitter @devilsdenpod247. And keep those faces strong and the verve high. Go do